Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
They are perhaps the most hated and dreaded items found on a football field. Yes, those little yellow penalty markers, the flags. When they come out, you know something bad has happened. And we're going to talk about the history of the penalty flag and some changes that were made on this date coming up for you in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And we're going to talk about some great history today because today, April 15th, when this episode airs, as we know from the football history headlines, I'm sure you just got done listening to, it is the anniversary of the flag in the NFL being changed from white in color to gold. Yeah, April 15th, 1965, the NFL changed its official penalty flag color to gold. And there are a few reasons this change occurred. The first was that the majority of the officials wore white hats back then, and these hats were used as a tool to mark spots of fumbles and out of bounds, etc. With the advent of television broadcasts of games becoming more and more common, and spotters in the stands would have an easier time discerning between a marker of a spot and of a foul. So they had the white hat versus the gold hanky on the field. Now, a recent article in profootballtalk.nbcsports.com tells us that a second reason was that sometimes littered paper from the stands, mostly white in color, were used and often confused with the penalty flags. And I'd imagine that games played on a snowy day would be an impairment using the color white as well, too. Now, there are a variety on claims to how the penalty flag was first introduced by game officials. Now, we know there was a similar hanky used on the field in the stocking cap era of football, and according to an interview with Coach John Heisman found in Frank Menke's Encyclopedia on Sports via Allison Danzig's great book, Oh, How They Played the Game, it stated there that there were not five-yard stripes going across a field. The statement goes on to say, there were no linesmen and no line sticks. The referee kept track of distance by just dropping a handkerchief where he guessed the ball was last put in play. The players of both sides would slyly try to move that handkerchief while some teammate engaged the referee in a discussion of the rules. So he varied action by kicking a handkerchief as well as a football. End quote by John Heisman. Now, Timothy P. Brown, who we've had on this program a couple times in his great book, How Football Became Football, the First 150 Years of the Game, which we reference all the time because it is just an excellent book. If you don't have a copy of it, make sure you get it. Do yourself a favor. Well, anyway, Tim says that a guy that was an official at the high school level used flags on the field in the mid-1930s. Tim also says that there are newspaper reports in the state of Florida in 1940 that commented on how one of the game officials was dropping their handkerchief in excess. So we know it was happening in the mid-30s, 1940, in that report. The American Football Database.com shares that the idea for the penalty flag came from Youngstown State coach Dwight Beatty, who first used it in a game of Oklahoma City University on October 17th at Youngstown, 1941. Prior to the use of flags, officials used horns and whistles to signal a penalty. Now, author Tim Brown once again adds that Coach Beatty's wife sewed together some weighted flags from old Halloween costumes, bed sheets, and some drapery weights that were just sitting around in the family home and in the closets for the Oklahoma City at YSU game there in 1941. Somehow, Beebe convinced the on-field officials for the game to use the red and white striped flags for the fouls that they would see in the game. The idea caught on as the officials, fans, and coaches just loved the concept. Now, one of the game's officials was Jack McPhee, who kept his flag and used it in other games as well. But Jack was a Big Ten official, and he spread the news about the concept to his fellow field officials, and it started to be used around the Big Ten, I'm sure. Now, the official adoption of the use of the flag occurred in 1948, some 7 years later, at the American Football Coaches Rule Session. At first, the idea was to throw the weighted marker towards the offended team's sideline so that everyone knew who the foul was on. Now, flags are to be directed at a certain yard line that a foul is committed to nowadays, and this works great for spot fouls. In dead ball fouls, such as offsides or false start and the like, it's common for the wing officials, you know, those guys near the sidelines on the line of scrimmage, head linesmen and a line judge, who may call many of these, to toss their flag on the side of the ball of the offending team. Now you'll see it's pretty common in the last decade or so where those wing officials will actually signal false start, and they radio to the referee, or they signal the offsides, you know, so doesn't stall the game and keeps things going in motion. Now, a coach in Salt Lake City in the early 1967 suggested a thought about one colored flag for the offense and a different colored one for the defense. But thankfully, this never caught on. Yeah, Coach Paul Winther suggested the idea of green flags for the offense and red ones for the defense to remove all angst from anxious fans when the hankies would fly into play. You know, his thought was, you know, those flags fly, and then there's, the officials have to get together, and there's a conference, and everybody's sitting around with the anticipation. Who is the foul on? You know, what can we do? We got to keep this game going on. He figured if it was, you know, the red foul, a red flag goes fly, that was the defense. A green one was against the offense. And no angst. Everybody knew right away. Well, how difficult that would be from an officiating standpoint. It's, you have a lot of things in your arsenal that you're tossing as an official or moving. Besides flags, you have bean bags. And we talked earlier about the use of the hat. Well, the bean bag is used quite often to mark spots and spots of fumbles and where a scrimmage kick, a punt, is fielded, and where that kick ends, and some other things, out-of-bounds markers and things like that. Now, there have been many occasions where flags have been remembered in a game. In the NFL, Cleveland Browns lineman Orlando Brown was struck by a flag that did some serious damage during a December 19, 1999 game against Jacksonville's Jaguars. Now, Brown was accidentally hit in the eye by a penalty flag weighted with ball bearings thrown by referee Jeff Triplett. Triplett immediately apologized to Brown, but the big man was forced to sit out the entire 2000 NFL season waiting for his right eye to heal up from the damage of the flag. It struck him directly in the eye. Now, Cleveland released him after the season. In 2001, he sued the NFL for $200 million in damages. And according to reports, he settled for the sum of between $15 million and $25 million in the year 2002. Needless to say, it was strongly encouraged for officials at all levels. You know, I was at the high school level, and I can remember them talking to us, and not to toss a flag at where the offense occurs, but throw it to a yardage line adjacent to where the foul occurred. Now, not at players, and don't prevent. You know, we want to prevent further injuries and accidents like the one that happened to Mr. Orlando Brown, and we don't want anything to happen to any more players. From a ref's point of view, where to store the golden penalty flag markers is a matter of preference. You know, I've seen some of my zebra friends, and I've done it myself, you know, hold them in one of their four pants pockets. You know, you have two back pockets, two front pockets. And I've tried this myself, but found having it tucked away in the waist of my pants, you know, right in the front, with the weight hanging over my belt, to be the most comfortable and accessible. Now, you're going to use, as an official, you know, unfortunately, you're going to use a flag more often than you're going to use a beanbag. So I'm right-handed. I would usually have my flag on the right side of my belt buckle, so it's close to my right hand. My beanbag would be on the left side of my belt buckle. Throw it a little bit less often. You know, believe me, most of us would prefer to be throwing the beanbag much more. Now, I used to, you know, had a theory that I never liked to show the colors of my flag. I didn't want the yellow to show. We were wearing all black and white. I would wrap the end of my flag, the weighted part, the ball part with the ball bearings or the sand or whatever's in them, different makeups of them. We don't use drapery weights, by the way. And we would wrap that with tape, with black athletic tape. So it would be like a black ball on the end of the yellow flag. And what I would do with this is I would tuck that so the black ball would be hanging out above my black belt, but none of the gold of the flag would show. That would be tough, tucked down into my pants that I would be wearing and come out when it had to be. That way you're not showing any of that color, because flags are, let's admit it, it's probably, like we said at the beginning, the most dreaded and hated item on the football field. You know, representative of negativity for the most sake, and that somebody did something wrong and they're going to be penalized for it. It's a great tool, but it's got a negative connotation and everybody dreads seeing the flag come out, unless you're on the end of the offended party and then you want to see the flag come out. For the most part, it's negative, so you want to keep that hidden away and tucked away, and hopefully you don't have to use it. But when you do, you have to use it. And it's a use as a foul marker, but when not needed, let's hide it away. That's my theory on officiating, and I think that's shared by many of those ladies and gentlemen that are out there on the football fields at all levels. And please deal with them with respect. They have a tough job to do. They're not liked by anybody walking in the stadium, and sympathize with them, and they're not making a lot of money doing it. They're doing it, for the most part, for the love of the game, especially at the high school and below levels. It's not a thing you can make a career at. Believe me, you spend more money in equipment and traveling and getting to the games and everything else you need to do to become an official. But you want to work with the kids and you want to work the game. And that's what's a really enticing thing of football officiating. And they're always looking for football officials, always looking for a few good men and women that can spend some time on those Fridays, Saturdays, and every other day of the week to let youngsters enjoy the game of football just like we did when we were kids. Some food for thought, and thank you for joining us, and we hope you'll join us back tomorrow for some more great football history here on the Pigskin Dispatch. Till tomorrow, everybody, have a great gridiron day. Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.